Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Thursday, September 5th, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Wait for Harvest. Weather Delayed Growing Season Hit Yield Outlook by Kelsey Watznauer and Kevin Barlow. Atlanta. Central Illinois farmers typically look at Labor Day as a time to start preparing their machinery for harvest, but combines are expected to sit idle for at least a few more weeks. They are still a long way off, said Ron Kindred of his soybean crop growing in the Atlanta area. A lot of the problems go back to the ground conditions when we planted. It was very wet, actually too wet, when we started planting, but we couldn't wait for it to dry. Most farmers say it's too early to project a start date for harvest, but most agree their yields are likely to be affected significantly. Kindred, who also serves on the Illinois Soybean Association Board of Directors, said his yield from about 750 acres of soybeans and 750 acres of corn will likely be 25% lower than last year. Could be even more than that, maybe even 30%. His highest estimates for the year are approximately 180 bushels per acre of corn and 55 bushels per acre of beans. Last year, Illinois farmers averaged 210 bushels per acre of corn and 65 bushels per acre of beans. The late planting dates just kind of puts us behind from the get-go, Ross Perkins, a farm manager with First Mid-Ag Services of Bloomington, said. You know, corn needs so long to mature, and really we're going to be kind of racing against an early frost to see if we can get things to mature. The former Soy Capital Ag Services firm also has offices in Decatur, Mattoon, Kankakee, Peoria, and Springfield. Perkins says it's too early to determine an average yield since the crops haven't been in the ground as long as usual. He estimates most farmers will have to wait until the end of September to start harvest, with combines still in the fields throughout October. As of September 1st, the U.S. Department of Agriculture reported the corn condition throughout Illinois was rated as 4% very poor, 15% poor, 35% fair, 40% good, and 6% excellent. Soybean condition was 4% very poor, 12% poor, 37% fair, 40% good, and 6% excellent. Last month, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue designated all 102 Illinois counties as primary natural disaster areas. Producers who suffered losses due to excessive moisture, flooding, and flash flooding that occurred since September 1st, 2018, may be eligible for U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Service Agency emergency loans. Emergency loans can help replace essential items such as equipment or livestock, reorganize a farming operation, or refinance certain debts. Most of this year has tested Illinois farmers' mental and physical fortitude, said Illinois Farm Bureau President Richard Gubert, Jr., in a statement released after the declaration was announced. Weather variability, from unrelenting spring rains to extreme July heat, has caused uncertainty in our communities as we head toward what is sure to be a long harvest. The Secretarial Disaster Declaration is a recognition of our struggles in 2019, through the availability of federal resources to aid our recovery. Some 9.37 inches of rain fell in Bloomington in May, according to the National Weather Service in Lincoln. In June, July, and August, rain averaged 2.48 inches. The majority of Decatur's rain fell in May and June, with 9.42 inches before Independence Day. August had a sharp uptick with 6.55 inches. The less than ideal planting conditions left spotty fields across central Illinois, including places where standing water prevented growth early in the summer, Perkins said. In some areas, after we got the crop in and the rains kind of stopped, we were able to get things planted, and then there was almost more of a dry period through a later part of the summer, so that was kind of a hindrance there as well, he said. The U.S. trade war with China seems to be only exacerbating the problems farmers face in Illinois, the nation's top producer of soybeans. Until now, the bulk of Illinois' grain has gone to China, but the Asian country is taxing those imports as retaliation for President Trump's action against a country that he says is stealing technology, ignoring intellectual property and patent protections, and manipulating currency. Kindred, who usually exports about 30% of his soybean crop to China, expects to send only one-third of that this year. The sooner they can get them resolved, the better off we're going to be out here on the farm, he said. Reflecting on the low commodity prices, he said many farmers will have to tighten the belt a bit as long as the trade war continues. And here is another front page story headlined, Fall Enrollment Up at ISU, Heartland, Lincoln College, by Lenore Sabota. Normal. The largest freshman class since 1986 helped boost Illinois State University's overall fall campus enrollment to 20,878, an increase of 1.2% over a year ago, the university reported Wednesday. ISU's official 10th day of classes census counted 3,860 freshmen this fall, an increase of 171, or nearly 4.5%. Lincoln College has its largest incoming class in a decade, and, as it adds more bachelor degree options, its traditional student enrollment is its largest ever, with 756 full-time students and 75 part-time students on the Lincoln campus. About 266 students are enrolled in the college's Adult Accelerated Bridge to Education program in Normal, Lincoln, Peoria, and Oglesby. Heartland Community College also showed an increase in new undergraduate students, both in terms of headcount and number of credit hours. Heartland's 1,554 new students is its largest freshman class in 4 years, an increase of 6.95% over fall 2018. Sarah Deal Hunt, Vice President of Enrollment and Student Services, said, "The biggest jump in new student numbers comes from freshmen who took dual-credit College Now classes." Meanwhile, Eastern Illinois University reported a 12.5% increase in its first-time freshman class from 789 last fall to 888 this fall, and a 3.7% increase in total headcount from 7,526 a year ago to 7,806 this fall. However, Southern Illinois University at Carbondale continues to see declines in total enrollment, and new first-time students, while transfer and graduate student numbers were relatively flat. The total enrollment of 11,695 represents a 8.75% decline over last year, and first-time students dropped to 1,037, an 8.47% decline. Illinois Wesleyan University expects to release its fall enrollment figures about September 16th. Jeff Mavros, ISU's Director of Admissions, said Wednesday, "We're really excited about this class." He said, "Being the largest since 1986 is impressive, but what makes this class special is that it is high-achieving, involved, and diverse, and checks every box that an enrollment manager is looking for. The incoming freshman class has a high school GPA of 3.48 on a 4.0 scale, an average ACT score near 24, an average SAT score of 1121, and 441 students in the honors program, the largest incoming class of honors students at ISU. 32% of the freshman class and 26% of the total student population comes from traditionally underrepresented groups. International enrollment is up 8% over last year. We really believe diversity brings a lot of things to the classroom. It brings the perspective of a real-world approach and contributes to class discussions, said Jana Albrecht, Associate Vice President of Enrollment Management. Albrecht said ISU's partnership with INTO is a large part of the increased international enrollment. It's getting the word out that Illinois State can be a destination for international students. President Larry Dietz said in a statement, "This year's historically large freshman class is part of the continuing trend of strong enrollment at Illinois State University." Several factors have played into ISU's ability to maintain or increase enrollment, while most public universities in the state have struggled, according to Albrecht and Mavros. "We work hard every year to find out what our prospective students want," said Albrecht. "We've added a couple of extra events this year, bringing in prospective students based on their interests." Illinois' Aim High grant pilot program, aimed in part at retaining students who might otherwise attend school out of state, certainly for us has been an incentive this year. Although the budget impasse that crippled schools a few years ago has been set aside, most of the challenges are still with us, said Mavros. "We're still in the trough of college-going students, and that's not changing anytime soon. And there is a lot of out-of-state competition for that dwindling number of high school graduates." And a sidebar tells us, ISU Fall 2019 enrollment, total 20,878. Freshmen, 3,860. Transfer, 1,869. Undergraduates, 18,250. Graduate students, 2,628. International students, 558. The next story is entitled, "Shock Fulfills Deal Terms So Prosecutors Drop Charges," by Jason Meisner. Chicago. 6 months after striking a rare deal with prosecutors, former U.S. Representative Aaron Schock on Wednesday was officially cleared of criminal charges alleging he used his campaign funds as a private piggy bank, the Chicago Tribune reported Wednesday afternoon on its website. Completing what's known as a deferred prosecution, federal prosecutors in Chicago dropped all charges against Schock after he completed a probationary period where he stayed out of trouble and paid back $68,000 to his congressional campaign funds that he'd used for personal expenses. Schock of Peoria was also required to work out a plan to pay back taxes to the IRS. The Peoria Republican formerly held the 18th District congressional seat, now held by Darren LaHood. The brief hearing before U.S. District Judge Matthew Kennelly completed a stunning turn of events for Schock and cemented a deal virtually unheard of in a high-profile corruption case. Schock, who was not required to be in court and indeed did not show, officially has a clean record, meaning he would be free to run for public office again if he chose to do so. Schock's attorney, George Terwilliger III, said after the hearing, "A just result was achieved when this case was reviewed objectively by seasoned prosecutors committed to justice rather than the prior making of untoward and outlandish allegations." Once a rising Republican political star, Schock's fall from grace began with stories of his lavish tastes, including the extravagant remodeling of his Washington office inspired by the British television series Downton Abbey. After he resigned in 2015 amid a federal investigation, Schock was hit with a sweeping criminal indictment in Springfield, alleging he used his government and campaign funds to pay for personal luxuries, including private jets, skybox tickets at Soldier Field, and paying for travel to get a haircut. Schock denied the allegations, and his legal team accused the lead prosecutor in Springfield of pursuing the high-profile case to advance his own career. In a stroke of luck, the case was transferred last year to Chicago because the judge overseeing the matter was accused of having improper contact with the prosecutor's office in an unrelated case. In announcing the deferred prosecution deal in March, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago said it had taken a fresh look at the charges and decided it would be a fair and just outcome, especially given that Schock has no criminal record and resigned from public office. In his 6-page agreement with prosecutors, Schock acknowledged he had a regular practice as a public office holder of obtaining event tickets at face value and later selling them for a big profit. He admitted that through this side practice, he failed to report $42,375 in income to the IRS over his 6 years in office. Schock also admitted overbilling the House of Representatives for mileage as he drove around his district for both official and campaign purposes. As part of the deal, Schock's campaign committee, Schock for Congress, pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor count of failing to properly report expenses. Schock first entered public life at 19 when he won a write-in campaign for the Peoria School Board. Elected to Congress in 2009 at age 27, he was seen as a darling of the Republican Party and had taken on crucial political fundraising roles when federal investigators began to look into his use of his campaign funds and house allowance to pay personal expenses. He was charged in a 24-count indictment in November 2016 with wire fraud, mail fraud, theft of government funds, making false statements, filing false reports with federal election officials, and filing false tax returns. A judge later dismissed two of those counts. The next story is headlined, Beyond Truthiness. IWU leader says search for knowledge difficult, essential. By Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. Interim Illinois Wesleyan University President Georgia Nugent called on students and others attending Wednesday's President's Convocation to continue the search for knowledge and truth, even though it can be a difficult and even dangerous pursuit. Nugent started her interim role in August and is expected to serve for 1 year. She was a senior fellow at the Council of Independent Colleges and President Emeritus of Kenyon College. A 12-member search committee was announced Wednesday to conduct a national search for a successor to Eric Jensen, who retired as president in May. In her talk, Nugent focused on the university's intellectual theme for this year, Fact or Fiction. She stepped in to give the keynote address after the originally scheduled speaker, Michael Shermer, was dropped because of past allegations of sexual misconduct, which he has denied. She said it is important to keep in mind the principles set forth by the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, Democrat of New York, who said in the 1960s, "You are entitled to your own opinions, but you are not entitled to your own facts." Nugent said, "Unfortunately, in our era of truthiness, alternative facts and massive efforts to deceive via social media, this basic concept has largely been lost." She cited as an example the differing views about former FBI Director James Comey, a polarizing figure. Simply falling back on choosing which facts to believe by saying one is a progressive or conservative, a Democrat or Republican, does not serve us well in our university or in our nation, said Nugent. Unlike the often told story of Isaac Newton discovering the principle of gravity after being hit by an apple, for the most part, finding truth is not that easy, said Nugent. That's why part of what IWU is trying to do is equip students with the tools to gather information, weigh evidence, and make judgments, she said. University spokesman John Twork said the intent is to have a new president in place for the 2020-21 academic year. The committee will meet next week and will work on a more specific timeline, he said. The search committee will be chaired by W. Thomas Lawrence, a 1980 IWU graduate and member of the board's executive committee, who is a retired tax managing partner of Ernst & Young LLP in Chicago. The international search firm Witt Kiefer will assist with the search. Twork said consultants from Witt Kiefer will be on campus next week to learn what qualities and qualifications the campus community feels is necessary in our 20th president. Six other board members also are serving on the committee, including three from Bloomington Normal, Colin Canaday, president, Advocate Broman Medical Center, Dr. Laura Randolph, a plastic surgeon, and Steve Wanamaker, board vice chairman, Heritage Enterprises. Three faculty members, a staff representative, and a student representative, Lokwa Chuk, a nursing major from Bloomington, also will serve on the committee. Here is an article entitled, County Looks to Nursing Home Finances. Panel OKs $244,000 to repay state. Here's plans to cut losses. By Paul Sweech. Bloomington. Efforts to reverse financial losses of the McLean County Nursing Home are progressing, even as the County Board's Health Committee on Wednesday approved an emergency appropriation ordinance for the facility because it owes $244,195.86 to the state. That was the assessment by Nursing Home Administrator Cindy Wegner, following Wednesday's committee meeting at the McLean County Government Center. I think now with Camille Rodriguez in place as county administrator, she and I are working closely together, and we are putting together a strategic planning team to work on the continued updates and plans for the nursing home, Wegner told the Pantograph. The committee approved an emergency appropriation of $244,200. The matter will go to the county board on September 17th. The nursing home had been overpaid by the state for reimbursement of care for Medicaid patients from July 1, 2016 through December 31, 2017. The overpayment was found in a recent audit. Rodriguez and Wegner said the overpayment was not intentional. The system the state uses is not regularly updated, so the system doesn't catch up with the information submitted, Wegner told the Pantograph. Rodriguez said overpayments to nursing homes for Medicaid reimbursement is not an uncommon occurrence. During a typical 18-month period, the nursing home gets $4 million in Medicaid reimbursement from the state, she said. Committee member Catherine Metzger asked several questions, including what steps Wegner was taking to reduce the risk of this happening again. Wegner responded that there have been no overpayments since January 2018. We are putting a process in place to assure it doesn't happen again. Rodriguez and Wegner told the Pantograph that the nursing home is working on implementing recommendations made by a Blue Ribbon panel in spring 2018 to reverse the nursing home's financial losses while continuing to provide quality care. Among improvements, Wegner said, are converting 8 of 78 resident rooms from semi-private to private, with 8 more to go. Hiring a hospital nurse liaison to assist with placements in the nursing home. Becoming a part of OSF Healthcare's skilled care network to facilitate referrals, while continuing efforts to join Advocate Healthcare's network. Continuing to hire employees to replace temporary contract staff, and updating the therapy room and three nurses' stations. The nursing home, 901 North Main Street, Normal, averaged 99 residents in August, with 65 on public aid, 19 private pay, 9 public aid pending, and 6 on Medicare A. The nursing home is the best-kept secret for long-term care, Rodriguez said. The nursing home had an operating loss of $1,820,291 for the fiscal year that ended December 31st, compared with a $2,127,357 operating loss for fiscal year 2017, said County Auditor Michelle Anderson. In other business, the committee approved an amendment to the telepsychiatry agreement with Genoa Healthcare to add 5 hours a week each for inmate psychiatric services at the McLean County Jail and for the McLean County FUSE program to support people with mental illness who have frequent encounters with law enforcement and emergency departments. Tricia Mallett, the county's behavioral health coordinating council supervisor, told the Pantograph that staff members are being trained for a triage center for crisis evaluation, and for FUSE, outreach has begun to FUSE participants, and psychiatric resources are being evaluated for telepsychiatry. And here is an item entitled, Peasley Runs for Coroner in Logan County. Lincoln. Logan County Funeral Director Don Peasley has announced his candidacy for Logan County Coroner. The position now is held by Robert Thomas, who has been coroner since 2004. Peasley has been a licensed funeral director for more than 25 years. He was an emergency medical technician with the Atlanta Rescue Squad and has been a member of the Logan County Paramedic Board since 2014. He owns Quirum Peasley Funeral Home in Atlanta and Peasley Funeral Home in Lincoln. He's active in Lincoln Rotary Club, Atlanta Masonic Lodge 165, and Ansar Shrine and Logan County Shrine, and serves on the Lincoln Park District Board. And we have a road closure notice in today's paper. Lee Street, Bloomington. Lee Street, from MacArthur Avenue to Wood Street, is closed due to sanitary sewer work. And here's an item from today's area calendar. Light the Night, 5 to 8 p.m. this evening, Thursday, Uptown Normal. Free bike lights, safety checks, and giveaways. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for September 5th. Please stay tuned.